You know, I love going to the movies. Anybody else like going to the movies? Now, I mean, I live for it. When I was growing up, we went to the movies all the time. Of course, we weren't allowed to watch anything beyond PG. And I remember that one time when Uncle Buck came out with John Candy, it was the only non-rated R movie at the theater, and my brothers and I saw it 8 times. Anyway, and I would sit in the theater, and we had rules. I don't know about you guys, but if you know about this, there's the man rules. Anybody know about that? Like, if you go to the movie with another guy, there has to be a seat in between you, all right? And you can share a popcorn, but if your hands touch, it's a one-seat penalty, you know, incidental touch, one-seat penalty. No, I'm kidding. But the one thing that I can't stand in a theater is someone talking or asking me questions about the movie that I have not seen yet. Wives do this a lot to their husbands. Who is that? I don't know. I didn't come see the movie before you. You know, we're getting this at the same time. You know, is he the guy that did it? I don't know. You know, have you been there, right? And you sit in the movie, and I like the special spot. I call it the middle. You know what I'm talking about? It's like the middle seat on the middle row in the perfect spot where I'm not too far up, where I'm looking down at the screen, not too far down where I'm looking up at the screen. And I'm not too far back so that I can catch things in my peripheral view and be distracted. I like it when I just look and my whole world is the movie. Those are really kind of fun places to sit. I don't know. I get there early, like before anybody else, so that I can get that chair, right? I volunteered to help clean before, you know? Like, I can help you pick up the trash as long as I get that seat that I want to be in this movie, right? And I love the theater over in Rosenberg. First of all, if you go online, you can pick your seat, and your ticket has your seat number on it. Second of all, they recline. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're sitting in this chair that you wish you had at your house almost, you know. It doesn't go back as far as you want it to sometimes, but you're sitting in the most comfortable seat, and you get to see that. Well, I want to talk about where you're sitting today. And when I was growing up, in Revelation, there's this letter to the church in Laodicea, and he said that some of you are hot, and some of you are cold, but some of you are lukewarm, and I will spit you out of my mouth. And how many of y'all have heard a sermon on that before? Okay, so when I'm growing up, it looked a little bit like this one, right? Where you had one seat over here that represented the cold seat. Did anybody do this before? This is what my dad did. And over here, you had the hot seat. And in the middle, he would have another chair, and that would be the lukewarm, which I thought was interesting because that's where he was preaching from. But that's not was not trying to show that in his sermon. But he had these three chairs, and he made this statement, and other preachers have as well, that almost bothered me. That God would rather have you not in. Like, this represented, oh, I'm on fire for the Lord. Like, I am hot. I'm up in front. I'm doing stuff. I'm signing up for every weekend cleanup, you know, whatever it is, I'm in. And over here represented, I don't even know if I believe. I'm not even going to church, you know. This is cold. And in the middle was somebody who went to church but just wasn't on fire. And he was saying, you're just as bad as someone who is not in at all. Well, that bothered me. Anybody else? You know what I'm talking about? But when he started, I watched this, That the World May Know, which you guys have been watching some every once in a while on Wednesday night, a video series, and he described Laodicea, and all of a sudden this description made sense for the first time for me. In the city of Laodicea, they had these pools. They were known for, you know, some kind of medicinal things, like this eye salve and all these other things that they were giving out, but they were also known for one area where the water comes out of the mountains and it's ice cold, and you could lay in these little pools of this water and feel good. I mean, like, it's just like getting an ice pack, right? Like what we do now. And then they had these other mountains that had these little pools of hot springs where you could go and you could sit in something that was warm and feel like you're in a hot tub. That was the area of Laodicea, and Jesus knew this when he's sending this letter to this town, and he said, this is what you need to do. He says, you need to be useful like the hot springs, or useful like the cold springs. Not like what the Laodiceans tried to do, and that is to try to make a little aqueduct to take some of that good cold water or that good hot water and bring it down to another pool. What happened on the way from the hot pool to the new pool, or from the cold pool to the new pool? What happened? It got stagnant and lukewarm, like a pond. How many of y'all ever tried to swim in a pond? Right? That wasn't fun, was it? Like, I mean, if you, it's a lake, or if there's a spring-fed pond, that's a totally different. But if you try to swim in a Kentucky pond, it's no fun. Like, I used to hunt frogs, go frog gigging in Kentucky. We ate them. Yes, we ate them. And we'd have to walk in the pond with a flashlight and this gig in one hand and look for little shiny eyes before we stab it, right? But we're trying to walk on the inside of the water where the mud is up to your kneecaps. I didn't think ever, man, I'm going to come back tomorrow if you don't mind and go swimming here. That never crossed my mind. And I remember in grade school when we got the microscope in science class, they said, get some pond water. We want to see what's in it. Have y'all ever done that? It's nasty. And you start thinking about what he's describing here is stagnant, lukewarm pond water that's no good. He says, I would rather have you useful. Cold or hot, both are useful. Lukewarm, not so good. Lukewarm coffee, no thank you. Iced coffee, I like. I don't like hot coffee because I like to taste my food later. You know, I burn myself so easy. And I, you know, hot tea, awesome. Iced tea, great. Middle of the road, lukewarm tea, nasty, right? Ice cold water tastes great. Warm water, if I have to, right? I took a group to the Dominican Republic a few years ago, and this one lady, she would not drink water unless it had ice in it. And I'm like, we're in a third world country. You're going to have to get over it. She's like, I'm not getting over it. I will pay whatever the cost. You know, and we had ice. Okay, so by the end of the day, I had ice there. I got over that. And so today I just kind of want to talk about this in the position of where he was saying, you know, that there's some that are lukewarm. I want to kind of figure out what is the profile of a lukewarm. And I was reading a book called Crazy Love. And if you've read that book, one chapter describes this. And so we boiled it down to just a few chairs. He has a whole list, Francis Chan, of different explanations of what a lukewarm person is. And I want to just break it down to just a few chairs of what the lukewarm is. The first one is the chair of comfort. Now, we all like a comfortable chair. Yesterday, I went to a friend's 60th birthday party in Lake Jackson, and Randy, he's led worship here. It was Sandy, his wife, turned 60 with her twin, and it was a cool birthday party. But I walked into their new house, and he still had the same brown leather chair, and I sat in it most of the day on the air conditioned inside while everybody's out. No, I'm just kidding. It was awesome. Now, there's a comfortable chair. If you have a chair that you don't want anybody to sit in because it's your chair, do you have that chair? You know it and you believe it and you don't want anybody to get rid of it either, do you? That's your chair, right? I remember visiting a singing group called Lost and Found and auditioning to be in the group, and I remember just chatting, and I decided to sit down on the side of the chair, on the armrest. That chair didn't make it. It was everybody's favorite chair that they fought over, and I destroyed it. But it wasn't much there, and to begin with, it wasn't my fault totally, but anyway, I remember destroying that chair and feeling horrible. But sometimes we want to be comfortable. Anybody like to be comfortable? I like to be comfortable in where I'm sitting, and I don't ever get comfortable on a plane ride because the place where everybody says calls a headrest is a shoulder rest for me. There's no headrest for me. I fall asleep and get whiplash the whole trip. That's what I do. Well, in this chair, that person is they're comfortable. They go to church. And they sit in the same seat, and don't. I know a lot of us sit in the same seats. I sit in the same seat every week, right behind the computer. And you know, we all have our places. But a lukewarm person goes to church just because that's what we do, not because they feel compelled to worship. And they give, but they don't give sacrificially. Their heart just doesn't seem to be in it. See, God was talking to a group of people through the prophet Amos. In Amos chapter 6, he says this: "Woe to you who are complacent in Zion." Some translations say, who are at ease in Zion, who are comfortable in Jerusalem. "And to you who feel secure on Mount Samaria, you notable men of the foremost nation to whom the people of Israel come to Calne and look at it. Go from there to the great Hamath, and then go down to Gath and Philistia. And they are they better off than your two kingdoms? Is their land larger than yours? You put off the day of disaster and bring near a reign of terror. You lie on beds adorned with ivory and lounge on your couches. You dine on choice lambs and fatted calves. You strum away on your harps like David and improvise on musical instruments. You drink wine by the bowlful." That's a lot of wine. "By the bowlful. And you use the finest lotions." And look at this statement right here: "But you do not grieve over the ruin of Joseph." He said, he's talking about them in their houses, not in worship. And they're sitting around. They're wealthy. They're healthy. They've got all the food they need. They're just laying back, and they got a big old bowl of wine, drinking that and having the fatted calf and the choicest meats that they could imagine. They have someone there to entertain them, like David entertained Saul, right? And they don't care about what's going on in the world. They become so complacent in their comfortable chair that they don't think about someone else's pain. So let's bring it to our contemporary life. We sit in our lazy boy with our feet up, and we watch the news, and it doesn't bother us. I'm not saying you. I'm saying a person who is lukewarm clicks that clicker, turns to their favorite news station, and you see, like last night, four people were killed in a Waffle House at 3 a.m. And it doesn't bother us. A kid goes into a school. It should bother us. When terrorists strike like they did and kill 31 just the other day, yesterday I believe, a suicide bomber killed 31 people in Afghanistan. It should bother us. Now, I'm not saying you and I necessarily can do a whole lot about it from El Campo, Texas, but what we need to do is we need to be people who are compassionate. Do you realize that compassion is the one thing that ignited the power of God in Jesus Christ? When he saw someone dealing with a problem and he had compassion on them, their problem changed, right? He saw someone who was sick or who was crippled and he had compassion on them. The thing that happened next is that they were healed and their life was changed. He saw thousands of people following him that were hungry, and he took 5 loaves and 2 fish and he fed everyone because he had compassion on them. When he was asleep on the boat and the winds were rocking the boat, the apostles did not come to him and ask him if he was able to calm the storm. You know that? They didn't come and say, "Hey Jesus, do you have power over the winds and waves?" You know what they said? And you know the song, right? "Carest not thou that we perish?" Remember that song? Do you not care if we are destroyed? You see the word care? Do you care if we die, Lord? Peace, be still. Boom. His compassion ignited the power of God. And in your life, the compassion that we have for other people will ignite the power of God in your life. because then you become the hands and feet of Christ. One year when we were doing the Magi Project in the Dominican, it was 2008, and my dad was with me, or 2007, one of those years, and we met these kids from El Morito, the village of El Morito, in the middle of a road. They were on donkeys and mules, and we had like some folding chairs, or not actually folding chairs, those Rubbermaid stackable plastic chairs that they have all over the Central America. You know what I'm talking about? I usually put two or three together, then sit on it. But anyway, because they're thinner than the ones we have. And I just remember sitting in the middle of a street, a road, dirt road, handing out presents to little children who had to climb on mules and go back up the mountain. And I said, why don't we go to El Morito? And he says, because we'd have to climb a mountain. And I was like, well, what message are we sending? And then I could not believe the words that came out of my mouth. Next year, we're going to climb that mountain. I said that. I'd never climbed a mountain in my life. And so the next year, we go in, and the next time I went down, it was 5.5 hours of climbing up this mountain to hand out toys to kids. I had a projector on my back because we were going to show them the movie Elf in the mountains of the Dominican Republic. And I finally, after 5.5 hours, got to the top of this mountain, and I was done for the rest of the evening. And the next morning, I got up, and we hung out with the kids, and we gave them their presents. And then we walked down the mountain. Everybody kept stopping for breaks. And I said, if I stop, y'all are going to have to call a helicopter. So I'm going to keep on going. But what I learned from that is compassion will make you do some crazy things. It'll turn your heart towards God's mission, and it'll change the world around you. But if you're comfortable and you don't have compassion for others, it's not going to happen. Then you had another chair, the chair of minimal effort. Just like seventh grade, I just did enough to stay under the radar. You know what I'm talking about? You ever had those times where I just did enough? And sometimes at church we get to that point where we're just doing enough. We're giving just enough so no one talks to us. We come to church just enough so no one has to call us and put us on a list. I remember, you know what I'm saying? I remember when I was in college, I was preaching every weekend, but I went to this church on Wednesday night and in town where my wife and I got married. But every Sunday I was preaching at a different little church in the middle of nowhere. And one day this knock at the door, and one of the ministers and an elder were there, and they said, Haas, you're on our concern list. I said, well, who only goes to church on Wednesday, you know? And I said, every Sunday I'm preaching somewhere, you know, all these little churches, and I named them, and they go, that's great, you know. But I've been on the concern list, right? I mean, that's okay. But, you know, you do just enough not to get on anybody's list or to get into trouble. And God is calling us away from that. You know, when I was in college and studied psychology, one of the things that they were talking about is the stages of faith. And if you've ever studied psychology, this comes up. And so there's like all these different like beginning faith, and I don't know all the names. They were really big words that I can't remember, that I didn't memorize. But then they got to this final stage of like radical faith. And they said only select people ever get to radical faith. And they listed Martin Luther King and Gandhi and Mother Teresa. And I'm like, wait a minute. Isn't my God calling me to radical faith? Isn't the Great Commission calling all of us to radical faith? Instead of minimal effort, instead of just doing enough to get by, he's saying, I want you to live out your life so much that everyone knows that you belong to Jesus. I tell the teens all the time, if someone at school, when you invite them to church, say, you go to church, something in your life has to change. Don't sit in the seat of minimal effort. Look at Matthew chapter 5, verse 43. It says, you have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Okay, first of all, love your neighbor and hate your enemy is in the Bible, right here, as quoting someone who is wrong, okay? So it's really easy to put that verse up in your wall at your home. Say, love your neighbor, hate your enemy, Matthew 5:43. that would be wrong, okay? That would be called out of context. Jesus is saying, you've heard this. You hear people say, love your neighbor, hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. That is not minimal effort. Minimal effort is love your neighbor and hate your enemy. This is radical faith. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. That you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? For us today, I guess we could say it this way. If you love those who love you, will even the politicians do that? Right? And by everybody's facial reactions, I realize y'all are on the same team here, okay? So, and if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. In the way that you love, be perfect. Did y'all know it was in here, the Bible, that tells you to be perfect? For me, this is the hardest verse in the whole Bible. God's calling us to holiness and perfection. Then there's a chair of privacy. The chair of privacy is one where you're like, I'm going to go to church. And I might even give sacrificially, but I'm keeping to myself, and I'm not going to share any real life stories, and I'm going to put a mask on when I get around people. You know, there's a lot of lies that happen in the foyer of a church building. Y'all know what lie it is, don't you? How you doing today? I'm fine. I'm doing great. That's a lie sometimes, right? You just fought all the way to the church building with your family. I told you to buckle your seatbelt 2 miles ago. Do you understand me? And when we get to church, we're walking in as a happy family. Is that understood? Come on, you know it. My dad did that, and he's a preacher, right? And we live next door. So, we hide ourselves. If you ask me how I'm doing, what do I say? Blessed every time. You know why? Because it's never a lie. And because it doesn't matter what's going on, how I feel, what I'm doing, I'm still blessed. It didn't make me better than anybody else. I'm just saying I finally figured out how to answer that question without ever lying to someone. And that's to say I'm blessed. And then it comes back on me to remind myself that I'm blessed. And if I forget, you're welcome to call me out. If I say I'm fine, you go, ooh, liar. Say, I think you mean to say blessed. Yes, you're right. You know, this chair of privacy is not upset with their sin at all. You know, there's an old saying, hate the sin and love the sinner. Y'all heard that one? And then I heard a comedian one time do a little serious talk. Mike Lowry, if you've ever heard of him. Mark Lowry, whatever his name is. He said, I don't have time to hate your sin. I only have time to hate my sin. You know, this whole thing about privacy is that what happens is, just like Jesus was explaining when he said, you know, before you remove the speck of sawdust out of your neighbor's eye, go remove the plank that is poking out of your eye, right? Remember that little short parable that he told? Here's the meaning of that. I used to mean, like, understand it like, oh, if I go get this plank out of my eye, I can come back and I can tell you about your sawdust. No, here's what he's saying. He's saying when you see sin in someone else's life, it's not an opportunity to judge them. It is an opportunity for you to look at yourself and find your own sin and fix that. Don't hate the sin of others. Hate the sin in your life. And you know how you get over that sin? You find a trusted friend or brother or sister and say, pray for me. This is what I'm struggling with. Because following the confession, what John says in the book of John, or 1 John, he says, and God is faithful to forgive if we confess our sins. The lukewarm says, I'm gonna walk in and everything's fine and I'm private. Hot or cold means I'm sharing or I'm caring. Then there's the chair of safety. Oh, I like to be safe sometimes, right? You like to be safe? Like, that you know that that person is who you went to high school with, and you know that their name is whatever you think in your mind, but you're not going to say a word until they recognize you first. You know what I'm talking about? Like, someone you hadn't seen in a while, you're thinking to yourself, I know them. You know, when I first got here, it was kind of like I'd come into church, and I'm like, I wonder if they're a visitor, because I didn't know everybody. Sometimes we want to be safe. We'd be safe by keeping ourselves private or not talking to anybody, or we're going to be safe because, you know, we're just not going to try anything. I don't want to rock the boat. And comparatively, I don't sin as much as the rest of the other people in the world. You know, sometimes when we get together and we talk about some scandal in the church and or in some big mega church somewhere or some politician or some actor, and we start talking about that, they become our scapegoat because they make us feel better about ourselves for just a moment, because well, at least we're not in the news, right? That's safety. We think, oh, I'll just hide under this. Look at in Romans chapter 2, and starting in verse 1, we're studying Romans in our youth class right now, but in Romans, the first part of the Romans is pretty exciting, and we have our memorization verse that we're going to have as our summer verse, which is, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation for the Jew first and also for the Gentiles. That's a really awesome verse. And then he goes in verse 18, and he says, for God's wrath is on all ungodliness, right? And he starts listing ungodly deeds that we all go, that's right, that's right, that's terrible, that's sin. We'll call it sin. And then chapter 2, Paul is really good with words, and he switches it around. Because you're sitting there, if you're reading this letter for the first time of Romans, you get to Romans 1:18, and you're like, that's right, Paul, you go get them sinners. Those worldly people and those idol worshipers and the people who do all these evil acts. And then he says, chapter 2, verse 1, you, therefore, you always, why do we have to see the word therefore? What do we do with that? Anybody remember? We got to see what it's there for. All right? The word therefore, we got to see what it's there for. Why is it therefore? Therefore, after you've already judged everybody else, you, therefore, have no excuse. You who pass judgment on someone else, for at whatever point you judge another, you are condemning yourself because you who pass judgment do the same things. We've sat in a seat of safety, and where we say, look at his sin, or look at her sin. And while we're doing that, we're doing the same sin. But we're going to church and they're not. So therefore, I've got saved sin. We've looked at it that way. Like, I may be sinning like that person, but at least I go to church. And in Romans, he's like, who do you think you are? To sit in your seat of comfort, sit in your seat of safety, sit in your seat of privacy, sit in your seat of minimal effort, and look at someone else and say, oh, they're sitting. That's not what he's calling us to. Next verse, he says, now we know that God's judgment against those who do such things is based on truth. So when you, a mere human being, pass judgment on them, and yet do the same things, do you think you will escape God's judgment? Well, this isn't a fire and brimstone sermon today. This is hope. Because I want you to know where the pitfalls are. When I was a little boy, this man I worked for on his farm, he would take me to the fords in the river, right, where they used to be able to drive something or carts across, and they have all these names of these different fords, and they would take us swimming there, and the water was brown, but it was running water. It was just dark. It's Kentucky water, right? And so, but he would always mess with us. And he said, watch out for this hole. And he'd jump up and he'd plug his nose and he'd disappear. And my brothers and I would be backing up. Like, what just happened? Nothing happened. He just went flat under the water and you couldn't see him. There was no hole. But we avoided that little area for a while until we figured out his trick. You know? But here's the thing. This sermon is not intended to be an indictment, but intended to be a caution. A caution to say, look out for the holes. Because what God really wants is you to be useful. He wants you to experience radical faith that changes the world. Because there was a story in one of Max Lucado's books, and it was a fictitious story, and it said Jesus had returned after the ascension, and the angels came to him, and they were like, you know, tell us what happened, or what's your plan, are we going to all go down and tell everybody about you and what you did? He says, no, I took these 12 guys, and there's 11, and they're about to choose another one, but they got 12, and they're going to tell 12 people, and then those 24 people are going to tell 48 people, and you do the math, and before you know it, the whole world will know. And the angel said, okay, what if that plan doesn't work? And Jesus said, I don't have any other plans. So you are the plan. Not someone else. You're the plan, right? You're the plan. We're the plan. So we need to sit in a seat that is useful, hot or cold, that is soothing, that is changing the world around us, not lukewarm, because that is stagnant water and it's good for nothing. So the challenge today is to go and become a radical Christian. If you need the prayers of the church, we want to pray with you and for you. And you can do that now as we stand and sing. Just as I am without